Well, good morning and good afternoon, and a welcome to all of you who are joining us for the U.S. Women in PrEP Working Group. First in our series of webinars for 2014, my name is Manju Chathani from AVAC, and I'm delighted to welcome you all today. In a minute, I'm going to hand over to Dazon, who's going to tell you a little bit more about the working group and also about the webinar we have for you today, the excellent speakers we have, and the discussion we hope to have. This call is slated for an hour and a half to give us enough time to go through the presentations and also to be able to have good discussion. It's a really important time. It's been 2 years since the FDA licensed Truvada to be used as pre-exposure prophylaxis. And the question we're asking today is what the update is and how women are accessing it in the U.S. And we have a series of webinars. This is the first two. It's to really update the series we did last year in 2013. And we're going to let Dazon tell you a lot more about it and lead us to the discussion. So, Dazon, over to you. And again, thank you everyone for joining. The call's on global mute. If you need to unmute your line, it's *7. To mute back again, it's *6. Dazon, over to you.
Thanks so much, Manju, and welcome to everyone who's joined us today. We're so glad for all of you joining us, especially, and I concur and echo, Manju is welcoming a fantastic collection of speakers that we have this morning. I just want to take just a few minutes to bring us up to date on who we are as the U.S. Women in PrEP Working Group and what we're working on. Next slide. I don't
have the capacity to advance the slide here, so. Yes. So we've already wanted just to run over the, in terms of the agenda that we have before us, we're going to have each speaker give a talk for about 15 minutes, and then we'll have a few minutes for burning questions after each presentation, which will be closely monitored for about 5 minutes, and then we'll hear from all of the speakers and then open up for discussion at the end. And there you have the instructions on how to unmute your line, and we would respectfully ask everyone to keep your lines on mute except when you're speaking. You can enter your question into the chat box as you are using ReadyTalk, and you can also email your question to avac@avac.org. Apparently, we're probably going to have well over 200 plus folks attending the call today, and so we will more than likely get to your questions through the chat box and online versus the audio. Next slide, please. So today we're going to listen to a few presentations from Drs. Karen Hoover, who is a team lead in health and research for prevention at the Centers for Disease Control, Dr. Judy Auerbach, who is a professor at the University of California at San Francisco in the School of Medicine and is a research consultant at AIDS United, and Alan McCord, who is the director of education for Project Inform, also out of San Francisco. Next slide, please. The bottom line for the who we are in terms of the U.S. Women in PrEP Working Group is we are a mighty group of women and men and transgender individuals who come from HIV and AIDS, women's health concerns, and HIV prevention concerns, who make up a group of folks who came together a while ago in the interest of advocating for the appropriate application of research and the determination and implementation of biomedical prevention options for women, but particularly in response to the Gilead application and subsequent approval of the use of Truvada for PrEP. We're a small leadership team of three with a growing group of about 80 members. We hold face-to-face meetings as well as teleconference meetings. And, of course, as you are engaging now, we host webinars, participate, and engage, as well as implement our own research and communications around the domestic implementation of PrEP for HIV prevention. Next slide. So this is just a slide indicating the history of the advocacy that has come into the making of the U.S. Women in PrEP group. At one point or another, any, if not all, of our members have been engaged in one or many, if not all, of these different organizations and campaigns over time, focused in on the sexual and reproductive health and rights in terms of its relation to women and HIV prevention, women's autonomy and agency to control their own prevention options, that we come from a global advocacy perspective with a U.S. lens to this conversation, and that we have engaged and enjoyed over time a lot of different collaborations among both domestic and international partners. Next slide, please. So essentially the purpose of the group is that we came together as a national community representing women's voices on the questions around PrEP, the PrEP research, the PrEP data, the federal as well as industry mobilization around the implementation of PrEP and ensuring that there's accountability and advocacy as well as the inquiry going into ensuring women's safety, efficacy, and accessibility to PrEP through the PrEP research, the different research categories and trials, as well as demonstration and implementation projects, as well as the full-on rollout of PrEP. We're also organized to educate and engage community in the PrEP conversations and in disseminating appropriate information as well as feedback in terms of understanding the acceptability, the accessibility, and the beliefs around PrEP in the U.S. And, of course, overall is to mobilize a diversity of folks who are interested in ensuring PrEP and biomedical prevention options for women as appropriate. Next slide. So that's just a sample, and you can keep moving through that slide. Thanks, Jackie. That's just a sample of how we came out the gate at CROI 2013 with a women's U.S. Women in PrEP Working Group statement on our questions around or our lingering questions around PrEP, but more calling to account our federal partners for responding to our questions around what the implementation strategy for women in PrEP in the U.S. Will be. Next slide. So here are key aims, articulating our pathway to responding to the questions in that statement, and that's an ongoing process simply because some of those questions were not answerable with a letter or with a verbal response, but really in the way of how things are working and what the operational strategy is for implementation. That we wanted to ensure ongoing civil society engagement in the process of planning and rolling out PrEP, that we wanted to ensure and support a national plan for provider education and social marketing around PrEP. I think we're going to hear some news about that today in terms of the provider education and ongoing information about PrEP. Plan for incorporating PrEP education and access for women into the national HIV/AIDS strategy, which is due up for review and possible renewal in 2015. So we have our work cut out for us in that arena, making sure that PrEP for women is included in the overall strategy, and a process including our own milestones, feedback, and mechanisms, as well as the national resources and accountability to implementing PrEP for women. Next slide. So these are just some of those unanswered questions in a bunch of big buckets that we continue to hold conversation about and to disseminate information once we feel that those questions are being answered. At least continually discussed and studied through the different research mechanisms that are available. So we're still answering questions around the access to PrEP, and that's a full bucket in and of itself in terms of the locality of the availability of PrEP, provider education, cost and payment of PrEP, as well as community education and opportunities for receiving PrEP. Adherence is another question, looking at continually at the risk, safety, and side effects of PrEP for different populations of women in the U.S. Have we reached, are there gender-specific guidelines, and if so, what are they, and how do they fit into the overall? And what's the national plan for coordinating plan for implementing PrEP? Next slide. These are just some of the activities that were accomplished in 2013 and 2014. Next slide. And this is a growing body of PrEP advocacy partnerships that we work very closely with, including AVAC and their PX Rural Program. The PrepWatch.org is currently one of our home bases for the repository of information collected and shared through U.S. Women in PrEP Working Group. And then there's a longer list following that immediate partnership with AVAC to other groups that are involved with the U.S. Women in PrEP Working Group. Next slide, please. And as I come to a closeout, just to talk about where we're going and what's happening next, is that we've had a series of meetings, both face-to-face with high-level White House, as well as national agency partners like the NIH and OHADIP, or the Office of HIV, AIDS, and Infectious Disease Policy, as well as leadership at the Centers for Disease Control and other industry partners, including Gilead. And we will continue that conversation both face-to-face and in periodic teleconferences and other communications. We continue to host our national webinars, of which the next two we'll talk about in the next slide, that we are also keeping our eye on not only PrEP in its current form, but other forms of PrEP that are in development and may become available to women, and other biomedical prevention options. We're looking forward to hosting our next working group face-to-face meeting in Seattle in February 2015 to happen just prior to CROI, the Conference on Retroviruses and Opportunistic Infections, which is slated for the end of February in 2015. And then there's other national and international engagement opportunities that we intend to either present or participate in, including the U.S. Conference on AIDS. We've already mentioned CROI, AIDS 2014, the network meetings, as well as the Adherence Conference and the Research for Prevention Conference coming up in October in Cape Town. We have submitted and published articles in online as well as print media such as Positively Aware, and we're looking forward to putting on more workshops, satellite, oral, and poster presentations in the future. Next slide, which I think is almost my last. And these are just the next two upcoming webinars that we'll have the solid date soon, but just to put them on your radar, our very popular PrEPception webinar, which brings on a vast experience as well as information around serodiscordant couples using PrEP in the interest of pregnancy. And, of course, we want to continue this conversation around what and who, what makes women at risk and who are the women at risk. So our risky in terms of PrEP. So our risky women webinar on disrupting the simple notions of women's HIV risk, which is always a really fascinating conversation, will take place in early November. Next and last slide. And so with that, I will say thank you again for joining us. Let's get started. And I would like to bring next up on deck Dr. Karen Hoover, who, as we said before, is the team lead with the Health Services Research for Prevention with Negatives Division of HIV-AIDS Prevention at the National Center for HIV-AIDS, Viral Hepatitis, STDs, and TB Prevention. Welcome, Dr. Hoover. If you're ready, I'll turn it over to you, and thank you all for joining us again. Dr. Hoover, star 7.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, hi. I was just saying thank you, Dazon, and good afternoon, and good morning to our West Coast colleagues. Thank you to AVAC, Sister Love, and the U.S. Women in PrEP Working Group for the invitation to speak at today's webinar about implementing PrEP for women for HIV prevention. You all know that PrEP is an exciting new prevention tool, and its availability marks the beginning of a new era in HIV prevention. And so I'll talk about the use of PrEP in women and how it can give her control to keep herself HIV negative. But first, I'll provide a brief refresher about the risks that women face in the United States. And so this slide shows the number of new HIV infections among the top 8 affected demographic groups in the United States, as defined by sex, race, and ethnicity and behavior, such as sex of sex partner and injection drug use. And of course, as you know, and as you can see on the slide, the largest burden of disease is among MSM. But women also bear a significant proportion of the burden. Women accounted for 20% of the estimated 48,000 new HIV infections that occurred in the United States in 2010. And most of these new infections, about 85% of them, occurred from heterosexual contact. So given that most new HIV infections are occurring in MSM, why are there so many new infections in women? Why are so many women at risk of HIV infection? And I think there are several factors that probably contribute to the large number of new HIV infections in women. Women might be unaware that their partner is HIV positive. And if they are aware of his infection, they might not know for sure that he is taking his antiretroviral therapy or that his viral load is suppressed. And as the receptive partner, women have a higher risk of acquisition with vaginal sex and an even higher risk with anal sex. And in fact, we know that among young U.S., anal sex has become more common, with more than 20% reporting it during the 2006 to 2010 cycle of the National Survey of Family Growth. We also know that in relationships, women often lack control that is necessary to protect herself. In some cases, women might not be successful negotiating condom use, and of course, condom use always requires the participation of her male partner. STDs can increase both the risk of transmission and acquisition of HIV. And although they're common, they're often undiagnosed in both men and women because they tend to be asymptomatic. So if they aren't screened for, they often go undiagnosed, and they can be a cofactor in transmission. And then finally, women often choose partners within their community. And if the woman is in a population or geographic location with a high prevalence of infection, her risk of exposure to HIV during sex is And so you guys have seen this continuum of care, I'm sure, many times. This slide demonstrates the fallout of the continuum of HIV care in the United States. And we know that HIV viral load, of course, can be effectively suppressed with ARV therapy. But you can see that many persons living with HIV fall out of the continuum of care, resulting in only a fraction of infected persons having a suppressed viral load. So a woman cannot count on not becoming infected by her partner, even if he's being treated with ARVs, because she might not know the status of his adherence or his viral load suppression, and often she has very limited power to affect his suppression and thus protect herself. In addition, even with a suppressed HIV-infected partner, a woman might have a partner outside of the primary relationship who could, and this outside partner could pose a transmission risk to her if he is HIV infected. And these data, which are part of a sub-study with data from the partner study, demonstrate that both men and women might have a partner outside of their primary sexual relationship. And so this slide shows the continuum of HIV prevention with PrEP. And I like this figure. It's a very simple model, but it's very useful to us because it highlights steps in the continuum that are required, the key steps, for successful prevention for negatives using PrEP. And I think that some of the steps on this diagram, they're very important points for assessment of adherence to recommendations and for targeting of interventions to improve health services provision. And so based on HIV testing, and of course we recommend universal HIV testing of all persons aged 15 to 65 years old, and of course women are almost but not quite universally tested during their pregnancy for HIV. And so this continuum of care starts with an HIV test, and if a woman is found to be uninfected, and then she's determined, and she's also determined to be at risk, and we can talk a little bit more about how we can assess who is at risk among the uninfected women. Then she can be offered PrEP either by that provider or referred to a provider who does offer PrEP. And then, of course, adherence is an important key step in protection with PrEP, and it involves adherence of both the patient and the provider, and I'll go into that in a moment. And then at the end of the continuum, she remains uninfected. And so a couple of extra points, I'd like to make a few other points about this continuum. I want to point out that CDC released new HIV testing recommendations last week, and we're now recommending screening with fourth-generation tests that can diagnose HIV infection even earlier. And the ability to detect acute infection, as is possible with the testing algorithm, it's especially important for persons who are in populations with a high prevalence of infection. And they can be used to ensure that PrEP candidates do not have acute infection that can be missed by older tests. And then secondly, I think it's really important to point out that it's challenging for providers to know which women in their care should be offered PrEP. To identify HIV uninfected women who are PrEP candidates, it's important to know what that woman's future risk of infection is, and this must be assessed by her provider. And so a discussion of sexual risk behavior can be very difficult, both for patients and for providers. And CDC is working on developing a tool that will assist providers in identifying women who might benefit from PrEP. And this tool is useful not only identifying women, but it can be a stimulant for a conversation between a woman and her healthcare provider about HIV prevention and the role that PrEP can play. And then finally, as I've mentioned a bit previously, we need not only to monitor patients' adherence to taking their medications daily and to attending their follow-up visits for care, but we also need to monitor the provider's adherence to CDC's recommendations for provision of PrEP, including performing appropriate screening tests at PrEP initiation and at follow-up tests. And these are things that CDC is planning to monitor moving forward. So I want to quickly review the clinical trials that provided evidence of PrEP efficacy. Efficacy was demonstrated in the four studies that are highlighted in teal in this table, with high efficacy for HIV prevention among those who had high levels of adherence as measured by blood levels of tenofovir. And two other studies that enrolled women, highlighted in purple, were stopped early because of lack of PrEP efficacy. The failure of PrEP in these trials was due to low adherence with taking the medications. It's really important to note that in the other studies, the ones that are highlighted in teal in this table, PrEP was they included women, and PrEP was efficacious among these women when their adherence was high. So PrEP is an important HIV prevention tool for women, and it empowers them with the control that they need to remain uninfected when they're in a relationship with an infected partner. And it's also a very important tool for women who have partners whose HIV infection status might be unknown to them. And so I'm going to review some of the recommendations in the recent CDC guidelines. So CDC recommends PrEP for adult heterosexually active men and women who are at substantial risk of HIV acquisition. And this includes women who have inconsistent or no condom use, who have an HIV-positive sexual partner, including women who are or who intend to become pregnant, those who've had a recent bacterial STD, women who have a high number of sexual partners, who have engaged in commercial sex work, or who live in a high prevalence area or are part of a social network with a high prevalence of infection. And I just want to talk a little bit about women who are intending to become pregnant. Of course, couples who are trying to conceive don't use condoms. And so to prevent infection in his female partner, the infected male partner must have reliable adherence to his antiretroviral therapy to keep his HIV viral load low and thus for him to be less infectious to his partner. But just relying on the HIV-positive partner to take his medication and be virally suppressed doesn't provide complete insurance that he will not transmit his infection to his female partner. So PrEP can offer this protection. And, of course, it's important to note that women are more susceptible to HIV infection during pregnancy. So they might want to consider continuing PrEP throughout the pregnancy, even after they've conceived. And then finally, PrEP is also an option for negative male partners of HIV-infected women who intend to become pregnant to provide them protection during conception when condom use is not possible. So before starting PrEP, women should have a negative HIV test, and ideally this negative HIV test should have been performed using the fourth generation testing algorithm, which is able to detect HIV earlier than other older tests. The woman should also have no symptoms or signs of acute HIV infection. She should be determined to have normal renal function and should be currently taking no medications that are contraindicated along with PrEP medications. And then finally, the provider needs to document her hepatitis B virus infection and vaccination status. At follow-up visits, women need to be assessed for adherence to their medication, and they also need to be assessed for any side effects that they're having. And, of course, they should be offered counseling if needed to help improve adherence and should be assessed for STD symptoms at every visit. In addition, every 3 months, all women should have an HIV test and should have a pregnancy test. At visits that occur initially 3 months post-initiation and then every 6 months thereafter, her renal function should be assessed to make sure that she has no compromise in renal function. And then every 6 months after initiation, she should have routine STD testing, even if she reports no STD symptoms. And this includes testing for syphilis and for chlamydia and gonorrhea. And syphilis is very easily tested with a blood draw. Chlamydia and gonorrhea can be tested also very easily with either a provider or patient self-collected vaginal swab, which is the test of choice for these infections. And so PrEP use in the United States is low, but we're optimistic because we do think it's increasing. Truvada was approved for PrEP by the FDA in 2012, and uptake has been low, but as I've mentioned, is increasing. Based on a study by Gilead, almost half of the prescriptions were written for women, yet few OBGYNs have been prescribing PrEP. We hope that this trend is going to change. The good news is that ACOG has recently published guidelines for PrEP use in women. And so we think this will go a long way to help increase awareness of PrEP among OBGYNs who, as we all know, are really important providers of health care for women. And so increasing implementation starts with understanding the barriers. And this slide includes lists of some of the barriers that I think are encountered at both the patient and provider level. I think both patients and providers are unaware of PrEP. Patients can have some concerns about HIV medication side effects. They're concerned that the medications might make them quite ill, although with counseling and discussions, they can learn that with Truvada, side effects generally tend to be mild and are short-lived. Patients can also be concerned about the potential stigma that they might face from friends, family, partners around taking HIV medication. Patients are also concerned about copayments. And, you know, this is a very real concern and one that I think is receiving a lot of attention nationally, and we're thinking about these issues as well at CDC. Primary care providers also face barriers. In addition to being unaware of PrEP, they have primary care providers, especially a little less experience with managing HIV medication. And I think for many years earlier in the epidemic, the message that most providers, heard and responded to was that HIV is a very complicated infection and that it's in the patient's best interest that primary care doctors not manage the infection, that they be referred to specialty clinics. And, managing HIV infection has become a bit more manageable by primary care doctors, and more primary care doctors are, in fact, managing it. And PrEP medications can be easily, and I think prescribed by primary care doctors with a lot of resources available to support their use. I think providers are also concerned about enabling risk behavior in their sexual risk behavior among their patients. And then finally, as I've previously mentioned, there really are issues with conducting a sexual risk history. I think their providers have a lot of things they need to cover with their patients during a very brief visit, and both providers and patients can be quite uncomfortable with a conversation about sexual risk behaviors. And so this is a logic model that provides a comprehensive framework for PrEP implementation, and it's helping to guide CDC as it develops its plans for PrEP implementation. And I think among the activities that are really key and depicted in this model, CDC can play an important role in several of them. And that includes supporting trials that demonstrate PrEP efficacy and safety, and we've done that, preparing and revising guidelines for clinical use of PrEP. And as you know, our guidelines were released in May, and they really have been very well received, and we think will be very useful in supporting the community, the medical community, in its PrEP uptake. CDC has a key role in preparing and supporting clinicians to provide PrEP with educational materials and tools, and we've been working on several. And I think CDC can also work to create demand among potential PrEP users by education campaigns and social marketing. And then finally, I think we play a key role in evaluating and disseminating best practices for PrEP provision in various clinical settings. So I think we can accelerate PrEP implementation for women by focusing on important providers of care for women, including OBGYNs, physicians, and other providers who work in federally qualified health centers. And I just want to make a note here that CDC is working in collaboration with CDC Foundation to evaluate the provision of PrEP in FQHCs, including and will include women in this study. Primary care offices and STD clinics are also very important venues where women seek health care services and where PrEP referrals can occur. And so I think we can support the education of providers in these venues and disseminate tools that assist providers in identifying women who might benefit from PrEP. But we also need to educate women about PrEP and how it might be able to protect them at various times in their lives. And then finally, we need to identify, evaluate, and disseminate best practices for PrEP delivery. And so I thank you for your attention, and we'll take any questions that you might have if we have time. Do we have time, Daison?
Yeah, thank you so much, Karen. We have just a few, and I already have a couple of questions on in the chat that have come in online. So I'm just going to throw them at you and then give you a few minutes to respond. First, I have two questions from each. The first question comes from Kevin Fitter. Has the fourth generation test been CLIA waived? And if not, how long until that actually occurs? And then he has a follow-up on more of a social question, which is, how is the community receiving that message that being in a high-prevalence area places one at risk?
Okay, those are really great questions. And I think the first question about CLIA waiver of the fourth-generation test, there's some really good news. There is a rapid fourth-generation point-of-care test, the ALIR-Determine test that measures HIV antigen antibody, and it's been FDA cleared, and my understanding is that the company that manufactures the test has submitted the required data to the FDA to receive a CLIA waiver. So we're very optimistic that test will be available for non-clinical settings for testing, and also might be a very convenient tool to use in some clinical settings. So that will be happening. But the fourth generation testing algorithm that's described in the new CDC guidelines is primarily one that's laboratory-based and is currently in use in the United States, and we expect its use to be expanded in future years. And then regarding the question about how does being in a sexual network with a high prevalence of HIV increase a woman's risk of having HIV?
Yeah, the question is more of how is the community receiving that? Does that seem to be a message that goes over in terms of understanding, or is it more of a not-in-my-backyard response? This is the question.
Yeah, I don't think that we know the answer to that. You know, I think that's a really great question, and I would, you know, invite others to comment on whether they think that message is being received. We hope so, but we're not quite sure. I think that's a difficult question for us to answer.
Absolutely. And the next, thank you for that, and thank you, Kevin, for that question, those questions. And next we have Wanda Commander, who wants to know, and this is at the top of the list in terms of when we talk at the community education level about PrEP, is the PrEP medication costly and maybe the reason for low numbers of usage? And if so, what's being done to improve on the cost?
Right. Well, I think we hear often that cost is a barrier, and I think it can be, but there are many ways that patients can gain access to PrEP. We know that I think most private insurance providers and Medicaid plans are in fact providing PrEP coverage for patients. Among those who might not have health insurance, there is a program that is supported by the manufacturer of Truvada, the only FDA-approved agent for PrEP, and Gilead has a user assistance program where they pay for the medication in those who qualify. But
great.
I think we do need to think a little bit longer term about even with coverage by healthcare payers, including private health insurers and Medicaid, what we can do to help with those high co-pays, and I think those are things that we'll be thinking about addressing in the future.
Absolutely. I've got one last very quick question, and then I want to move on to our next speaker. And if we don't get your question quick round or the quick fire round, then we're certainly going to have a little bit of time at the end for more open discussion to catch up on some of your questions we've missed. But just in the last few seconds, Karen, can you tell us if this information that you just shared, and Nilda Fernandez says this is great, is this information also shared in Spanish for Spanish-speaking only patients and consumers?
The PrEP guidelines?
The guidelines, yes.
The PrEP guidelines are they're not currently available in Spanish. But the supplement fact sheets for providers and patients are, in fact, translated into Spanish. They're available at the CDC website.
And that would be cdc.gov?
Listed under PrEP tools and resources.
Great. Thank you so, so very much, Karen Hoover, who's going to stay on the line and join us at the end for answering some of the questions we didn't get to. Next up, I want to introduce you to Dr. Judy Auerbach, who is a professor at the University of California, San Francisco School of Medicine, and she's also a researcher consultant with AIDS United. Judy, if we could have you next up on deck, and thank you so very much for joining us today.
Sure, it's my pleasure. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, I don't see my slides up yet, though.
Me neither.
There.
There.
Oh. Let's get started. Let's continue. Well, I'll just begin. Okay, we got instructions now. Thank you for inviting me to participate in this webinar. It's a real privilege and pleasure, and I'm making this brief presentation on behalf of my team, which includes Vignetta Charles, Gina Brown, the Gina Brown from New Orleans, not from the NIH, Suzanne Kinski, and Maura Reardon, affiliated with AIDS United, which had the foresight to actually find out the point of view of PrEP from potential consumers. That is what women themselves know and think about PrEP and the likelihood that they might actually take it up in the United States. So I'm going to give a brief overview of what we found in a focus group study that had two phases and altogether took place in 10 cities with over 200 women. So let's begin. Let's see if I can advance my slides here. It's not working. Next, please. So just I don't need to regale this group about the situation of HIV and AIDS among women in the United States, but the main point for this discussion today is that of the clinical trials that Karen reviewed, none so far has included women in the United States for a whole host of scientific and other reasons. And so, in fact, even though PrEP is now out there, we know very little about what women know and think about PrEP and the likelihood of their own use of it in the United States. So that was the background to developing and implementing these focus group studies. Next, please. which were undertaken in the last 2 years. We did round one before PrEP was approved, just before PrEP was approved by the FDA in general for use among women and men in the United States, and that took place in 4 cities, as you can see on this slide, and all of these focus groups were done in collaboration with community-based organizations who did the recruitment of the participants, organized the actual focus group sessions, and helped identify and provide a local facilitator for the discussions. So the first round, as I said, took place before PrEP was approved by FDA, and the second round in six different cities, took place after PrEP was approved by the FDA. And here, in relation to the question that was asked earlier, we defined at-risk women. We tried to recruit women who might be defined as at-risk by virtue of the prevalence in their communities, what was known about their own social and sexual networks, their own histories of sex and drug use, risk practices, and their educational economic status. So you can see that women were recruited by the local serving CBOs, and we followed the pretty standard focus group procedures. I will mention, apropos of the last question that was asked of Karen, that we did have 2 Spanish-speaking only focus groups in San Diego and did transcribe and translate those transcripts. Next, please. So here's an overview of the 2 samples from the 2 rounds, and as you can see in the first round in particular, we had a pretty good and true representation of the HIV epidemic among women by racial and ethnic identity status. In the second round, we oversampled Black and African American women because of the just overwhelmingly disparate rates of HIV infection among them. The age ranged, but the bulk of women were between 18 and 50. We had half the sample employed as unemployed, and for education, we had a bit of a reversal, you can see, from round 1 to round 2 with regard to a high school or GED degree as compared with at least some college. So the first sample had higher education level and then the second. But overall, in both rounds, you can see women, a majority of women had a very low income. Next, please. So in the focus groups, we had a range of topics and discussion questions, and I won't be able to cover all of them today, but this listing just gives you an idea of everything we covered and some of the ways in which we asked questions, which might have been a little bit different from some standards. But basically everything from basic information, had women even heard about PrEP, and if so, what about it, to would they be likely to use it themselves, and what might be some barriers and some facilitators of PrEP use among U.S. women from their points of view. And I guess it's important to say, I suspect everybody on the call understands the value of focus groups, but in addition to ascertaining real qualitative information from the voices of women themselves, there's an interaction that occurs in the course of the group discussion, which is very rich and helps create meaning and interpretation among women. So we had a lot of really vibrant back and forth. I'm only going to be able to show you a few quotes because we're presenting the findings from this study at AIDS 2014, and there's a bit of an embargo on some of the data, so I have to be careful about that. But we also have a paper under review for at a journal right now, so hopefully we'll have all of this rich detail out there soon. So next, please. In the second round, we actually added some questions related to adherence because the findings of the VOICE trial had emerged in between the two focus group sessions. So we wanted to find out what these women that we were talking to thought about why adherence seemed to be so low in the trials that focused on women in other parts of the world. And then we also asked about new and different formulations because although only oral Truvada for PrEP had been so far approved, we obviously know that there's scientific research underway right now, as Dazon and others have described, for different formulations of pre-exposure prophylaxis from injectables to vaginal rings and so on. Next, please. So we asked initially what women thought about who would be the most likely women for whom PrEP would be appropriate, and we got quite a range, as you can see here, but in the end, most women did say it's pretty much all women who have sex from a very young age to a very old age, and the fundamental reason for that was you just don't know what your partner is up to. So there was a somewhat mistrust of men and just a sort of reality that you don't always know what your partner has done with whom, when, and how honest they're going to be about that. So this is a way potentially to protect yourself. Next, please. So here's just some of the qualitative data about how women talked about this. as I was just describing, you pretty much don't know who's doing what. You don't know if your partner is faithful to you. You don't know their background. You don't know if they're telling you the truth. And even if you're married, you don't really know what your husband is up to. And the abbreviations Washington, D.C., Oakland, I think you'll get the hang of the cities. Next, please. When we asked about barriers to the uptake of PrEP, I should say that in this methodology, we did not give a list. We asked very open-ended, what do you think might be barriers or obstacles to the uptake of PrEP amongst women or including yourselves? And we got a whole long list, again, as you can see here, but the key ones were lack of information, cost, and side effects, and this is true in both rounds of the focus groups. So I'll say a little bit more about each of those. Next. With regard to lack of information, particularly the second round, when PrEP had already now been approved for use among U.S. women, in all of the groups, what we got was, first of all, the fact that almost nobody had heard about PrEP, and that was also true in round one. But beyond that, they were kind of pissed off that they hadn't heard about PrEP and distressed that this was something approved for women, but women were not hearing about it. So you can see that to some degree, some women, very few, only about a handful of women out of the overall 200, I'd say fewer than 10, had heard about PrEP to begin with. And what they had heard suggested it was only going to be used by men. So they were not happy about this. Next. I wanted to show this quote because the woman was saying that we would learn about this from our CBOs and service organizations in the community. So the fact that we haven't heard suggests that they haven't heard either and that they're not being well informed as the sort of mediators between the implementers or the policymakers and the scientists and us at the community level. Next. So as Karen mentioned, cost is a considerable issue, and we have some qualitative data to support the fact that this is high on the minds of women who might be PrEP consumers. And here what you see is, again, a recognition of their place in the world and their community's place in the world, that they understand that they're underserved and that cost is a considerable issue for most people in their communities. And if you really want to prevent infection, you really have to enable people to take up PrEP, and women people in particular in this context. And so PrEP has to be covered. The cost of it has to be covered, and ideally it should actually be free, as some say here, and they want to see their insurance systems cover that. Costs of PrEP wherever they are. Next. The second big concern was about side effects, again, as Karen had mentioned, and you can see the first quote is somewhat amusing, even though it's kind of alarming at the same time, that the side effects that typically get iterated about PrEP and a lot of medications, but PrEP in particular in this case sounded to one woman like just as bad as HIV itself. But in any event, the main concern here was about any potentially bad side effects and the interaction of PrEP with any other medications that they are already taking, including birth control and heart disease or high blood pressure medications, diabetes. Those were the big ones they were concerned about. Next. Now, we did not ask the question about risk disinhibition. You know, if women take PrEP or if men take PrEP, you know, would it somehow encourage unprotected sex or encourage people to have more sex altogether and that kind of thing. We rather asked about what do you think the impact of PrEP would be on your and other people's sex life, and out of that came some answers about what is typically called disinhibition. But I didn't show that here, but that was something that came up, that some women said, well, you know, people are going to be less rigorous about condom use. But overwhelmingly, women felt like PrEP was something auxiliary to condom use, not a substitute for it, and because they understood the continued risk of acquiring other sexually transmitted infections, of course, as well as pregnancy. So that was important for me to note. But the other thing I really did want to highlight was that a number of women identified PrEP as having the potential to actually improve one's sex life because it would eliminate much of the fear that currently exists around transmission and acquisition. Next, please. So we asked about facilitators as well as barriers to PrEP uptake. What would make it more possible and likely for women to take up PrEP? And here's a list of the kind of general categories that were identified by individuals. Next, please. And in particular, what interested us was how much the women in our focus groups did actually turn to their doctors and medical providers in medical establishments, not just community-based organizations, and that would be their first choice, whether it was a primary care provider or an OBGYN. They thought that they would prefer to have the interaction with that person and thought that that would facilitate their uptake of PrEP. However, a number expressed concern that since they had never heard about PrEP, they weren't so sure their doctors had heard about PrEP, too, and they wanted to be certain that their medical providers were well-informed. And you can see from this back and forth that they thought, well, you know, we're going to get ourselves more informed and we're going to bring some information to our providers as much as we will expect that they will have the information to convey to us. So it's something that should be a conversation and where we both need to be educated. But there was some skepticism, and I think Karen also mentioned this, that providers don't know very much about PrEP yet, much less mention it. Next, please. An additional concern was about kind of revealing oneself as being a person for whom PrEP might be available, which might suggest that one was promiscuous or having sex outside of a relationship that was familiar to a medical provider. And so this was just a case of someone talking about, being a little bit nervous about bringing up the discussion of PrEP to their providers. So that exists still as well. Next, please. A number of other issues and considerations came up in the course of the focus groups, or we asked specific questions about them, including what was the desired efficacy level, what did they think about the adherence issues, and what kinds of formulations or methods of administration of PrEP might be more or less attractive. You can see some of the other themes as well, but I'm just going to go quickly and talk about the first three. Next, please. In asking about efficacy level, we had begun the discussions with information about PrEP, what had come out of the trials, the different efficacy levels achieved that you saw on the chart that Karen showed from the clinical trials, we also asked, so we then asked them, you know, what would be a reasonable level of efficacy, because you could see from the trials anything from the 42-46% efficacy from the initial IPREX trial to higher rates of 75-78%. In general, but of course, efficacy rates much higher where people were actually adherent and taking the drug. In any event, we asked what would be ideal for you to feel like this is a good thing to take. And we had a range from 50% where some people thought, you know, if it adds any additional protection, that's going to be good enough for me, where other people said 99.9999%. So we had quite the range. But it was interesting to us that some folks did not expect it to be 90 to 100% effective and still thought it would be a good option. Next, please. So as I mentioned, we asked about adherence, and the way we framed the questions were about starting with explaining what had gone on in the clinical trials like FemPrep and VOICE, which were woman-focused or woman-only trials, as well as telling them about the trials that included serodiscordant couples in which one partner was female, and said, here's this range, and in the women-focused and women-only trials, we had very low adherence to oral PrEP, and why did they think that was? And so you can see from these responses that women were pretty smart about this whole thing and said, you know, sometimes people participate in clinical trials because of the compensation. This is a discussion a lot of the scientific community is having, whether there's sort of an undue influence on participation in trials because of all the benefits that derive from that participation. And then the other comments were generally much more about how it's difficult to take a pill every day. Everyday life gets in the way. A lot of women don't perceive themselves to be at risk. And if they're not having sex all the time, they're not thinking they have to take a pill every day. So it's about how they understand the place of the pill in their everyday lives, not to mention the fact that some people just are not pill takers altogether. Next, please. And there was some commentary about the conditions under which PrEP is even a reality, which is women whose lives are already compounded by a number of multiple syndemics and disadvantage, or just, you know, given that the population most at risk in the United States often is also poorer and has less access to services, there is a mental health aspect. And so this woman in particular, these women were talking about how you can't just pop a pill. You also have to give some mental health support to boost up self-esteem and comfort about taking this pill in the context of disease prevention to make your life healthy and happy. Next, please. So then, as I mentioned, we also asked about formulations, particularly in the second round. We actually asked about this in both rounds. And what was interesting to us is that overall we ended up with a whole range from the pill to an injectable. We described what was under study, I should mention, about injectables and vaginal rings. And we got a lot of input about how frequently the injectable seemed to be very popular, but it also depended upon how often it would be administered. The vaginal ring seemed to be the least desirable, although there were some women who said they would take it. It has a bad reputation in some communities because of NuvaRing and some problems that have arisen because of that, or concern that it will fall out or go places it doesn't belong. But it is important, I think, in the end, that we got very much of the theme of different strokes for different folks, that we should have a repertoire of possibilities of PrEP administration for different women under different circumstances who desire different methods. Next, please. As I think you can see from this quote, we need different options for different women. And, you know, there's a stealth factor that I think has always been conceived in the microbicides and PrEP discussion, particularly for women, and that is still recognized as important for a number of women. Next. So to summarize, most women who would be defined at risk of infection in the United States are unaware of PrEP at this point, and they're sort of disturbed that they haven't heard about it. But they and many women don't perceive themselves to be at risk, at least in the near term. But they did feel, the women we spoke with felt that with a high level of efficacy, with correct and complete information that they received from trusted sources, whether those were their doctors or community-based organizations or peers, I should mention a number of them said they wanted to learn about PrEP from people who were taking antiretrovirals for medication purposes before they made up their minds about whether they would want to take them for PrEP. They also still felt that condoms should be promoted and encouraged because there are other STIs that women are susceptible to acquiring. Other than the cost and side effects, there were a number of other conditions that and circumstances that were the most critical concerns for U.S. women, including the impact of PrEP on their sex life and drug-drug interaction. And as I mentioned, they want to see a range of formulations for PrEP, but seem to think that the vaginal ring is the least appealing, at least at this point. So I think with that, next please. I just want to acknowledge my colleagues again at AIDS United who have participated in this project and the sites and facilitators in all the locations in which we conducted the focus groups, the women who participated in those focus groups, and for round two, we had financial support from Gilead Sciences. So thank you all for your attention.
Thank you, Judy. I'm hoping I'm back up. Yes, I am. Thank you very, very much for that really thorough qualitative assessment and presentation, Judy, and we look forward to more coming out of your work. I have a comment and a very quick question that's specific to you, Judy, and then for those, we have a couple of other a little bit more technical questions that we're going to leave for the larger collective conversation at the end, balance presentation. But there's just one specific question in terms of, from Andrea Williams, what agencies were involved with the recruiting in Memphis?
Choices, which I think you can see on the acknowledgement slide.
Excellent. And then there was just a comment from Beth Hasty. I am HIV-positive woman. My wife of 19 years is negative. My viral load is undetectable. Recommend PrEP for my wife. Or no, because my viral load is undetectable. Also, woman-to-woman transmission is low for oral vaginal sex. But some, just reminding us, and thank you very much, Beth, is that some serodiscordant couples are same-sex. So thank you very much, Beth. But the recommendations for HIV-negative women in serodiscordant relationships.
I am not a medical provider, so I will resist any answers about what to prescribe or not, but I think that's exactly the question you should ask your provider.
Exactly. And thank you for that, Judy. I also think that that's a question that could be for a larger group, but that comment was really right on point. So thank you, Beth, for that. And, again, thank you, Judy. And if we could keep moving forward in the interest of time, so that we can have more room to answer some of the more questions, really, really good questions that are coming in.
I want to now turn it over to Alan McCord. Welcome, Alan, who is the Director of Education for Project Inform in California. Alan, welcome.
Hi. Can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine.
Okay. Great. Thank you. I can't advance, so if Jackie could advance the slides for me, that would be great. I'm going to wait for the first one. Okay, I'm not seeing my slides yet.
Yeah, me neither, Alan. I'm sure that they're loading them up.
Well, I can just talk a little bit until the slides. Oh, there we go. Oh, that's the very last slide. And anyone can get in touch with me there. There's my first slide. Thank you. So I wanted to talk about engaging the community and as well as medical and non-medical service providers around PrEP. Next slide. And so although I'm going to present probably each slide really about a website, they come down into certain silos of information. One, online sources. Two, print materials. Three, there's a good deal of community advocacy going on around the country right at the moment. I want to talk a little bit about provider training in San Francisco, but there's many more trainings going on around the country. And then also social media and something called Truvadahore. So please advance. This is a very unscientific way of the way that I see PrEP education in the country right at the moment. Gay men are fairly saturated with a good number of available sources of information. Women are lagging behind, and you'll see as I go through these slides that there aren't as many resources, but they are coming along for women. There's far fewer even directed specifically at straight men. And last would be transsexual men and transgendered men and women, as well as people who inject drugs, all of whom are, you know, people who could benefit from PrEP. However, I haven't seen material specifically developed for those two communities. Next slide. So first I wanted to talk about resources for providers. Next slide. And the first obvious one is the Centers for Disease Control and the new guidelines that came out last month. And so those are the clinical practice guidelines, so it's evidence and prescribing information. But there's also, at that web URL there, a provider's supplement, and that's more around operationalizing PrEP within the clinic setting. So checklist, needs assessments, as well as very important list of insurance reimbursement codes. So that's a very important piece out of the CDC. There's also a patient education brochure called Talk to Your Doctor About PrEP, and you see that URL there as well. Anyone can download that and print it out before they go in and talk to their provider. Next slide. So another resource for providers is the National Clinician Consultation Center, hosted by UCSF. That's their website as well. They don't have direct funding for PrEP education to medical providers at current time, so you're not going to see a page specifically around PrEP on their website. However, they are giving guidance to medical professionals around PrEP, so you can't call that number. And also leave messages on the weekend that they will return your calls. I'm also going to prevent, you know, the one thing about the providers, you know, patients can also take down this information in case the providers don't know about this these resources, and so they can refer their docs to these sources. Next slide. Another one, especially around family planning and conception, is BAPAC, Bay Area Perinatal AIDS Center, also at UCSF, and their web URL is there. Excellent guidance to medical providers around PrEP and family planning. There are two videos there, one directed at women and one directed at heterosexual men. So those are both very, very informative video educational tools. Next slide. The next area you probably have heard about is clinical care options. They do have some information on PrEP up there, however, it's mostly dated 2012 and 2013. I'm sure that they're pretty quick to respond to new developments, especially with the CDC guidelines coming out. So I expect to see, you know, more best practices slide decks on PrEP from clinical care options. So check out that website as you go along. You do need to sign up in order to get into it, but it's free. Next slide. Also, the Gilead Sciences website at starttruvada.com, and that has all the prescribing information for providers, as well as a portal for individuals to learn more about the prescription and side effects of Truvada for PrEP. Next slide. And then I just wanted to talk a little bit about San Francisco CME training back in March of this year. It was a collaboration among several different organizations, and almost about 100 providers and community individuals were present. And the format of the presentation was day-long. It had researchers, local ones here, talking about PrEP, but they also had panel discussions with young and trans people on PrEP, as well as small group discussions. And so I just wanted to highlight that this is a possibility for a lot of communities around the country to come together and provide CME training to medical providers in their communities. And so this is happening. If you want to schedule one, this is one model to go by. Next slide. So I wanted to switch over to resources for community. There's a lot more to cover here. So let's do the next slide. You'll see the websites. Since I work for Project Inform, I decided to put ourselves first. So we have two videos, four videos. All of them are directed at young gay men. Anyone can link to and use that as a resource for their constituents. We are developing two new videos for women this year, and so we'll promote that later in the year. We also have booklets, it's four of them, one directed at MSM, one directed at women, one written around self-advocacy, how to get PrEP, and the fourth one is working through a difficult medical visit, which is brand new this past month. They are free to order, also available in English and Spanish, so simply go to our URL there below our website. Next slide. Another women-based educational resource is the Well Project. That's their URL. It's a full page on information for PrEP for women. And they are also doing an initiative right now, reaching out to community and providers to share their stories. And you can get in touch with them at that email on that slide. So next slide. My PrEP experience, mostly men who have submitted stories to this website, this blog. However, women are posting there as well. This is hosted by AIDS Foundation of Chicago. So there's the URL, as well as they do a local provider and community education project called Ready, Set, PrEP. And the slide set URLs are listed below there, one for community and one for providers. So you can use those as resources for your own community education programs. Next slide. Also on Facebook, there is a page called PrEP Facts. There's more than 3,100 followers. It's mostly gay men who are online discussing PrEP. It's facilitated by health specialists out of New York City. It is a lot of information, emphasis on science-based evidence and community awareness strategies. There are some women who follow, but primarily that is a gay men discussion group. Next slide. Another resource is a really great video from the PrEP Rep Project from University of Connecticut and Stroger Hospital of Cook County in Chicago. This explains PrEP and how it works within the body. So the website there is whatisprep.org. And it doesn't target any specific demographic, so it is able to be used across all many communities. Next slide. The next website, blog is AVAC, and a great deal of information around research, clinical data, reports, and that sort of thing. Very useful for both providers and motivated individuals who want to read more about the data behind it. Later, on a later slide, I'll show you a, there is a subpage off of this website that is showing PrEP services in different communities around the country, so that's a really important page, and that'll be highlighted later. Next. San Francisco AIDS Foundation has, a three-part website from at prepfacts.org. One is directed at MSM, one is heterosexual men and women, and the third one is in Spanish. So there's really great graphics, and there's also a library with posters, postcards, and brochures. People can go to that URL and download those and print them out for their own local education. Next. The New York City Health Department just put out their PEP and PrEP web portal, and that is the URL for that. This is, does the visual materials for this website does span the range of heterosexual couples as well as gay men of couples and women. So you see some of those posters at the bottom there. And unfortunately, the URL is obscured for some reason, but you can go to the other URL on the left in order to find those posters. Next. Positively Aware put out a full issue last year in 2013. That is really great personal stories around, from young men and women and people of color, good deal of clinical data, basic information, and guest columnists. So that is a really great resource for people to have a nice magazine to talk about the full range of issues around PrEP. Next. AIDS.gov, it's a fairly simple site, some information and some graphics. Next. The Stigma Project out of New York City has great graphics around PrEP and other things, other issues related to HIV. So you can use these, get in contact with them, to see how you can use those in your local education programs, but it's very visually compelling graphics from the Stigma Project. Next slide. And so, there are a lot of different forums that have taken place around the country. This is community-based for the most part. Those are some of the cities that have they've occurred in. Some collaborations, a lot of these collaborations are often among gay activists, the LGBT centers, departments of public health researchers, and local demonstration project staff. And so those are continuing to happen throughout the year around the country. There are other community awareness educational programs that Gilead has sponsored over the last couple of years, Sister Love, Abounding Prosperity, Project Formes, and among many others. And then there are other organizations outside of that that are also developing programs, NMAC, Philadelphia Fight, Shiro, which I haven't listed here in Oakland, among others. And then also at the USCA this year, there's going to be an exhibit booth around PrEP education and resources that people can ask about. That last URL is the PrepWatch local programs URL. So they are developing that list, so I'm pretty sure that you could submit more services to AVAC if the city is not listed on that page that you know about. Next slide. As far as social media, PrepFacts is, again, on Facebook. There are also hashtags that are being used. Tumblr, it's just beginning to appear more often, but you can search for HIV PrEP on there. Reddit as well, you can search for HIV PrEP, but there's quite a few threads on there. And Instagram, those are just a few examples of pictures that have been on Instagram so far. Next slide. And I wanted to get to Truvada Whore. This is really almost exclusively among gay men, but just wanted to show this as a model of education. And there is a cadre of individuals around the country that are wearing this T-shirt out in public and starting up conversations because people are wondering what the heck that means. So the URL is there. You can order your own T-shirt if you want, or develop a program similar to this to encourage dialogue. And next slide. These are some other resources, clinical study reporting it from those websites. And then I think the last slide. And so if you have any feedback, I'd love to know anything else that you know about that isn't listed in this slide deck, so it'd be great to hear from you, and that's my email address. And so thank you.
Thank you so very much, Alan. Alan McCord with Project Inform. If there's one thing that I would say, I have actually learned a whole lot in this particular webinar. And there's one thing that I think we can solidly say is that when it comes to PrEP, especially PrEP education, PrEP materials, there are resources. There are resources online, and in some communities there are resources in person, but also that there's an opportunity for us to have more resources specific to women. So I'm going to open up back with the conversations in terms of folks who have sent us questions online and in the queue. I'm going to get to a couple that were asked first online, and then we'll open up the line. And a couple of them are quite technical. And so, Karen, I'm going to come to you first on a couple of these questions. One question that came in much earlier. And we're going to run this, by the way, for about the next 10 minutes, just so folks know that that's how long we have to take questions. So we would like, when you do come in to ask your question, which will be in just a moment, when you do come in, I'd like it to be a very brief and concise question or comment. David Schmidt says, all of the trials have shown very suboptimal adherence to PrEP, which raises the concern that resistance to two medications may emerge. And this presents a raft of problems for Truvada's use to treat HIV, and particularly for PrEP. What's the strategy for sequencing once resistance has emerged prevalently? And if I could just tap on one more.
Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, Karen, go ahead.
Okay, so that's a great question, but I think we're not really very concerned about, about resistance with Truvada. We have had seen some patients develop resistance. It's typically to the emtricitabine component. And interestingly, in persons who develop that mutation, they tend to be more sensitive to the tenofovir component. So it's very interesting. But when they stop taking Truvada, they eventually regain their they eventually become susceptible to the emtricitabine.
Thank you. I had one more sort of technical question that came in about the pay, and then I've got a question. Well, actually, let me do this since we're still on with the CDC. That this one is from Anna Forbes, referring back to Dr. Hoover's talk, mentioning that the CDC Foundation's demonstration project that's going to be conducted in FQHCs. Can you tell us what the timeline for that looks like? Like, when is it starting? How long is it running? And in what city?
Okay, so we expect that we're going to start enrolling in that study later this summer, and we'll be running it over a 3-year period, and it will be in 4 cities: Chicago, Newark, Philadelphia, and Houston.
Thank you. And Anna has another question. It's not a follow-up. It's a separate question. And Alan, this one is for you. I think that raising the Truvada horse issue without context around it could be problematic. So could Alan, you please explain what that is about and why the T-shirt was created?
Well, there has been, at least in the gay community, a good deal of what's called slut shaming. So individuals who are going on PrEP many other community members are, you know, taking exception to that, believing that they then are having a good deal more condomless sex, and so the slut shaming has occurred. What is and sometimes people have been called Truvada whores or prep whores because of this. We see this on sex apps and that sort of thing, and also out in the community as people are talking. So what you do is and what this effort has been about. The picture is of a individual here in San Francisco. Taking back that name. Truvada whore and repurposing it and really using it as a way to start conversations rather than being the object of slut shaming. So it's really been a negative and it's in turning that negative into a positive as far as community conversation.
Great, thank you. I've got a follow up for since we have our resource person up on deck from Thomas Hughesby. And thanks for those questions, Anna. From Thomas Hughesby, in terms of providers here in the semi-rural South, it's extremely difficult to find prescribers. Is there or is there a plan for a national list of providers that are willing to prescribe PrEP or currently prescribing PrEP?
You know, that's been difficult to get to. Project Inform has investigated that a bit, and we found a lot of resistance to having doctors, you know, come forth and be listed because then they may end up getting an onslaught of new patients. And just trying to identify providers who are willing to do that has been difficult. The one URL at AVAX, PrepWatch.org page of local programs, there's a list of 10 or 12 in different cities around the country. That's the start. We are in the we're at the beginning of trying to develop that information. It's not just the activists within the community, but also people who are in these communities, patients who find out their medical providers. It'd be great to get that feedback from individuals. So I think this is going to be a developing thing over the next year and a half. It's not as saturated as what we would like to see, but it's starting.
Excellent. Thank you, Alan, very much for that response and to Thomas for the question. I have one more online question, and then we'll come around to looking at folks who have raised their hands and calling you to unmute your phone and ask your question. We have about 5 minutes left. With the ACA, this is again from Kevin, with the ACA paying for preventative medical care, would PrEP qualify as a preventive treatment and therefore waive copay? That may be more of a policy question, but if there's anyone who has some background information on that and can respond. So, Kevin, what I think is that's a really, really, really good question because we need folks who can answer that for us. And I will certainly mark that as something that we ensure we get information more about or at least get some perspective about it. And perhaps someone who is on the call can raise their hand and let us know if they have that information. So right now, I would say we don't have any raised hands. So if there's anybody specific on the line who has a question you want to ask directly, we have about 2 minutes. You want to *7 to unmute yourself and then to *6 when you're done with your question. Go ahead, please. Anyone? Is that someone unmuting? All right. Well, as far as I can see in terms of our questions and comments that have come in online, I just want to make sure that we didn't leave anyone off to, is there someone there coming in with a question? Comment? Okay. Then let me do this as we close out and say that just in terms of concluding our call for today, I first want to say thank you to Karen Hoover, Judy Auerbach, and to Alan McCord for your wealth and depth of information and for your time with us today on the call. I want to thank our partners, AVAC, and the folks within AVAC and TX Roar. I also want to thank Anna Forbes, who works really hard on behalf of the U.S. Women in PrEP Working Group. I want to acknowledge the work and the
of and the U.S. Women in PrEP Working Group. And I also want to just wrap up in saying that the more we do these webinars, we definitely learn that we are moving and that we are learning a lot, but that there's a lot more for us to learn, and also more opportunities for us to create these spaces to keep sharing what we've learned and figuring out how to translate that to our relevant communities as well as our providers of women's health care. So on behalf of the U.S. Women in PrEP Working Group, unless there's another question on the line before we close it out, can I call for any last questions or comments from anyone online? Manju, as you opened us up, do you have any closing comments? All right. Hearing none, I want to thank everybody again for today's webinar, and we look forward to talking with you all and hearing from you in the coming days and on our next webinar in September. Thanks, and have a great afternoon.